19 hours 30 UTC on Tuesday, December 19th, and this is Zimbabwe Today. Good evening. Good evening. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonzere on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
The news that the army is returning to the barracks and leaving the national police to handle normal law enforcement has made many people in Zimbabwe happy. There had been concerns that having toppled President Robert Mugabe, the army might want to continue to control the streets for the long term. Yet many people say there are downsides to having the police back to patrolling on their own. With the army in charge, some people said they had fewer complaints about police corruption and they hated roadblocks. Gabe Zube, a colleague with the VOA Zimbabwe service, spoke with Dumisani Nkomo, an independent political analyst. Nkomo says police need new guidance in how they handle motorists and other public issues.
Obviously, in a normal situation, the army should not be maybe manning roadblocks or on the streets. So it's welcome in that sense, in the sense that they're going to become impatient after some time and start harassing people. But in most of the cases, they were very courteous to people, and in their roadblocks, they're not harassing people. So the big thing is that our police force is very corrupt and is known for their useless roadblocks and harassing against roadblocks. So if the police had to come back onto the streets and the roadblocks, efforts must be made to retrain their face, must be retrained, reoriented on public relations, on proper law and order, on courtesy, on public relations. They must be retrained before they're sent onto the street. Number two, the number of roadblocks must be reduced, must be minimized. There must be as few roadblocks as possible, because those roadblocks scare away investors. So those two things must happen. Because there might be a vacuum now. You might find the police will come back and restore to their usual ways of corruption and bribery. And we will not accept that as it.
So what is the starting point if the police have to avoid this kind of roadblocks and corruption?
I think first of all, let's not have that any roadblocks, if any roadblocks, for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Those people are doing very well without the police on the road. There was law and order. People were paying to traffic regulations. Even in terms of demonstrations, people were demonstrating peacefully, which means to a large extent the police were part of the problem, if not more of the problem in a way. So they must be reoriented. They must be retrained. That's the first thing. Secondly, there must be a reduction in the number of roadblocks. That's a demand. I mean, there must be a reduction in the number of roadblocks. You can't have 4 or 5 roadblocks on one highway. And you can't have, policemen on every single robot. You know, we need to actually migrate towards technology or in towns with cameras and so forth. Because our police force really must be cleansed of their corruption before they go back onto the streets. They've really been part of the problem.
So now, looking at the duty of the army, do you think that Operation Restore Legacy was successful?
Probably in terms of what they wanted to succeed, in terms of their objectives, probably they achieved their set objective. Obviously, maybe they may also have been wary of some elements they maybe default to, might have wanted to cause some insurrection as well. But in terms of their own objective, what they set out to do, they're probably successful in achieving their objective.
That was political analyst Dumisani Nkomo speaking with VOA's Gibbs Dube. The head of the Zimbabwe Republic Police, Commissioner General Augustine Chihuri, is going on leave ahead of his retirement. A government spokesman said yesterday that Deputy Commissioner General Godwin Matanga will step in as acting commissioner to replace Chihuri. Chihuri's retirement comes as part of a shakeup in security forces. Among other changes, the head of the Defense Forces, Commander General Constantino Chiwenga, is also retiring, pending redeployment. Many political observers say Chiwenga, who led the military operation that pushed former President Robert Mugabe to resign is a likely choice for vice president. The country's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is expected to name his vice president in the coming days. General Philip Valerio Sibanda will replace Chiwenga.
Police Commander General Augustine Chihuri has long been unpopular in Zimbabwe. He was the only general to receive widespread heckling from the public while he pledged his allegiance to President Mnangagwa. Today, social media had plenty of reaction to the news of Chihuri stepping down.
Munyaradzi Mokwarimba says, one hopes corruption and brutality have also retired with him.
Musa Sibanda says, after what you have put us through, I don't think Zimbabweans will ever miss you, Mr. Chihuri.
Bornwell Majasi says, Chihuri was the worst animal ever to walk on 2 feet.
Lav Modzovani says, war vets never get fired. Instead, he's going to be promoted.
Lucas Munemo says, it has been long overdue.
Musarua says, Chihuri was a good man. He cared about your safety. If you had no reflective tape or 3 fire extinguishers, or your license was a bit creased on the corner, his people gave you a fine and never gave you a receipt. Good people, good man, leading good people. Go Zimbabwe.
Njani mahlabezulu linjani zulu kandaba sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 am 2 pm la ngo 7 pm eZimbabwe lisibamba kumagagasi athi 909 Nidam Wave 4930 15580 la ku 6080 shortwave frequencies lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele Land of Sunshine.
As the year comes to an end, Zimbabwe's tobacco farmers are preparing for yet another growing season. Tobacco remains one of the country's most lucrative crops, bringing in much-needed foreign currency. Reporter Kudzai Zinavashe brings us this report about the state of the country's tobacco industry.
Isheune Sumoyo is the Tobacco Industry Marketing Board spokesperson. He says tobacco exports brought in nearly $1 billion this year, and that was from a smaller than expected harvest.
The 2017 marketing season, there was a slight decline in the tobacco that was sold at the floors, largely because of the rains. The weight of the tobacco was lighter, and as a result of that, we didn't reach the 202 million kgs that we reached the previous season.
Moyo says farmers are working to have a better tobacco harvest next season.
Going forward, we have come up with a tobacco input credit scheme for farmers that are not contracted. This scheme is giving farmers fertilizers, chemicals, and we've got about 28.5 million that has been availed by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe.
He adds, farmers can also borrow from Agribank to pay for labor and other expenses such as coal for curing the tobacco. As a result, he expects more farmers will plant tobacco.
The registrations for this season are higher than the previous season. At the same time, soon after the sales, they would register for the forthcoming season. So as of now, we have registered 100,000 farmers for this coming season, which is an increase of about 20% from last season.
Moyo credits the increase of tobacco's higher value compared with other crops. In addition, this year, the government raised the farmers' export incentive payment to 12.5% of the sales price, up from 5%. But tobacco farming has its critics. In the past, environmentalists have complained that tobacco farmers cut down trees to cure the leaves before taking their crops to auction. The Tobacco Industry Marketing Board has been working on long-term solutions.
We also have initiatives such as we're exploring curing tobacco this season using solar energy. We've got this project at Chinoy University and the Tobacco Research Board. We're trying to explore alternatives so that we can try and conserve our woodlots, because as you realize, we want to produce tobacco in a sustainable manner.
To complement these efforts, the Tobacco Board has set aside a fund to plant trees around the provinces. The cash crisis that hit the country last year pushed farmers to make the uncomfortable shift from cash to plastic money. Moyo says they have adjusted, and being in the banking system has helped them get loans. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
Education is an important aspect of Zimbabwean society. For those whose families cannot afford it, help such as the Zimbabwe-Algeria Bilateral Government Scholarship can make it possible to get a university degree. The scholarship awarded by the Zimbabwean government provides a monthly stipend of $3,000 to each student. It has now been 15 to 18 months since students in Algeria have received the stipends. I spoke with a few students who are struggling to survive. Many have student permits that are about to expire or have expired, but do not have the funds to renew them. They have turned to working as construction workers or as maids instead of attending classes. Students have sought help from the embassy in Algiers, but tell me they have gotten no official response. Instead, these students, who mostly come from disadvantaged backgrounds, say they are told to ask their families for help. On December 8th, about 70 students held a demonstration outside of the Zimbabwean embassy in Algiers, demanding to speak to the ambassador. They did not get the meeting with the ambassador. Rather, the Algerian police were called and forcibly removed them from the property. One student was injured. VOA made numerous attempts to contact the Zimbabwean embassy's student attaché, but he did not respond to calls. Students we spoke to asked us not to use their names or voices for fear of angering embassy staff.
In Zimbabwe, a group of civic organizations are calling on the government to make primary education free to underprivileged children. Reporter Kudzai Zinalashe has the report.
Reverend Taylor Nyanete is with the Zimbabwe National Council for the Welfare of Children. He explains the collective call as civic organizations for free primary education.
We are basically saying we want every child to be in school, inclusive of those with disabilities. Issues of basic education have been prominent among African countries, particularly in the SADC region, where governments such as Namibia and South Africa have adopted the free primary education policy in fulfillment of the right to basic education in accordance with the African Charter and the World Declaration.
Nyanete adds the importance of education in fulfilling the UN's Global Sustainable Development Goals.
The large investment in education is irrefutably fundamental in curbing poverty and underdevelopment. Additionally, its role globally is undeniably essential in building of any society, that is education. Hence, its inclusion in the Sustainable Development Goals.
Nyaradzo Mashayamombe is the director of Tege Life International Trust. She calls on government to make education free beginning early next year.
Calling on the government of Zimbabwe to urgently restore the legacy of education in Zimbabwe by allowing the hundreds of thousands of marginalized children who are out of primary school owing to a number of reasons. We are asking for the Minister of Education to release a circular to this effect immediately so that the children should have access by the second week of January 2018 when all schools open.
Government has told the organizations that it has no money to roll out free education. In its bid to cut costs, the government has frozen the employment of new teachers. But Nyanete says this can be funded by way of taxes. Only that transparency will be crucial in managing the funds. Nyanete says Zimbabweans in influential offices have a role to play in making the education free. These include members of parliament, known as MPs.
We have representatives in society. One of them are the senior MPs. They sit in constituencies. And for me, an MP should just say zero tolerance to a child who is not in school. These are policymakers. These are legislators. They just need to put their foot down.
He adds that the sad reality is the elected representatives are not doing enough and government is not fulfilling its mandate to give education to children. Mashayamombe says they have engaged the relevant minister, who was rather lukewarm to their call, but they will continue pushing. She says the campaign will escalate to call for the safe spaces and structures that also accommodate disabled students in schools. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinalashe from Harare.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidonjere in Washington. At 44 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change.
Debate on age limits and term length for the president of Uganda came to a sudden halt Tuesday when a lawmaker reported seeing soldiers on the premises. The allegation led to a scuffle between legislators and parliamentary police. As Halima Al-Tumani reports from Kampala, parliament was already on edge because of the proposal being discussed.
The Ugandan parliament is debating a bill that would abolish the age limit of 75 for presidential candidates, a move that would enable long-time president Yoweri Museveni to run for another term in the 2021 election. Opposition lawmakers and some members of the ruling party object to the bill, and debate that began Monday has been tumultuous. On Monday, shouting and heckling forced Speaker Rebecca Kadaga to suspend 6 members of parliament. Business came to a standstill again Tuesday after legislator Doris Okol told colleagues she had seen soldiers in parliament's Catholic chapel.
For me, I am shocked. I am really, really shocked. When I got there, both the Catholic and the Anglican chaplaincies were occupied by soldiers. They were eating from there. They have disorganized the whole place.
Members of the opposition, many wearing or holding rosary beads, then tried to enter the chapels but instead engaged in a scuffle with security officers who blocked them.
God is watching. They've spoiled my rosary. All these plates, cups, they are in our church, a Catholic church, where we are praying from. These soldiers, what do they want?
Last week, Speaker Kadaga issued new security guidelines that, among other things, stated Parliament is a civil institution that should be guarded only by police and that other security forces should stay away. When debate resumed after the scuffle Tuesday, Kadaga demanded an explanation.
So I want to know who are those people there? And I want the Minister of Parliament to explain who they are. And to appropriate this house. If you brought people here without my knowledge, I told you I want to know who is here. So the security of this region. So I want to know if there are parliamentary police. Why are they eating in the cabinet? What is their business in the cabinet? If they are come to pray, you don't eat.
General Jejo Dong, the Minister of Internal Affairs, said the officers were police, not military, and insisted they were not eating in the chapel. Legislators are currently giving their views on reports in favor and against the proposal to abolish the age limit. They are also debating whether terms for the president and parliament members should be increased from 5 to 7 years. It is not clear when the proposals may be put to a vote. Halima Asmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Vatereri veStudio 7 tinoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 short wave, 15580 short wave, ne 6080 short wave mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
A high-level forum has opened in Addis Ababa to discuss ways of restoring peace to war-torn South Sudan. From Nairobi, VOA's Joe Craig speaks to analysts who say factories have a major task on their hands.
South Sudan's high-level revitalization forum is underway in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. The forum is aimed at reviving the country's 2015 peace agreement, which fell apart in July 2016 after clashes between supporters of President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar led to widespread violence. International Crisis Group senior analyst Casey Copeland says power sharing and security arrangements will be the key objectives of the forum. She notes that East African bloc IGAD has made it clear that the forum is not a mediation or a new round of peace talks, although the parties all want something different.
rebel groups and most Western countries want the forum to be a new mediation. The goal is to, for them, is to create a new power-sharing arrangement, which significantly weakens the government's hand in favor of different opposition groups. The government, on the other hand, is quite keen that the existing arrangements are only slightly modified and that they remain in the powerful position.
Copeland says IGAD is put in the middle, trying to balance these demands. South Sudan analyst Alan Boswell notes that the peace deal was signed between two parties, but since that time, the opposition has fragmented, making the task of the peace mediators even more challenging.
It's not just that all the opposition groups want to, you know, take power themselves. They actually have different positions, in as much as the SPLA-IO under Riek Machar has been primarily interested in sort of taking power through elections after the rebellion failed in Juba, whereas some of these other groups now are more interested in sort of forcing a restructuring of South Sudan and gaining more local autonomy sort of away from Juba.
Copeland argues that the forum is focused on conflict prevention as well as resolution. She highlights next year's election as an example.
If it's held next year, then simply none of the groundwork has been done for it, and we may see competition within the government or amongst groups that have made a peace agreement with the government over who's going to stand as candidates in different places. And so the election itself poses a set of conflict risks that don't exist right now.
Tens of thousands of people have been killed in South Sudan, and 2 million people have fled the country since conflict broke out in December 2013. The United Nations has warned that more than 1.2 million people in the country are one step away from famine. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Children's Fund reports an alarming rise in violence and criminality in Central African Republic, with children and women most victimized from the lack of security and humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
As the year draws to a close, a look back at 2017 finds nothing but shattered hopes in Central African Republic. The UN Children's Fund says the year has been very difficult for children and women with little chance of improvement in sight. It says violence and instability continues to spread throughout the country. It notes the entire Southwest, which previously had been spared the crisis, is now the worst-hit region. Speaking on a telephone line from the capital, Bangui, UNICEF representative in CAR, Christine Muhigana, says some aid agencies at different times of the year have had to temporarily suspend their activities because of threats from criminals and armed groups. She tells VOA that children are losing out on many fronts, and 20% of the schools in the country are closed because of insecurity. She also notes violations of children's rights are on the increase.
We're talking about actual physical violence against children. We're talking about them being recruited in armed groups. We've seen such recruitment on the rise. We're also talking about attacks or occupation of health centers, health services that are being inaccessible to kids, to women in the areas where we have no access or where.
Muhigana says immunization campaigns against polio, measles, and other killer diseases have been disrupted in several regions because of lack of security. UNICEF reports more than 1.1 million people are displaced, both within the country or as refugees. That means more than one in five Central Africans have been forced to flee their homes since civil war broke out in 2012. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Seven villages are said to have been set ablaze in Cameroon's English-speaking southwestern town of Mafé after armed separatists attacked military installations and killed four soldiers. The Cameroon government says it has seized three of the armed separatist training camps. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon Communication Minister and government spokesperson Issa Chiroma says for the past 2 weeks, military and armed separatist groups have been involved in bloody conflicts in the English-speaking southwestern town of Manfi on the border with Nigeria.
Several suspects have been arrested. Large quantity of war and hunting weapons, as well as hundreds of military ammunition and uniform, have also been seized. One of those attacks has unfortunately claimed the lives of four of our gendarmes who were cold-bloodedly killed this Monday, December 18, in Kembok, Eyumojok subdivision in the Manyu division.
Chiruma refused to give the number of armed separatists killed by security forces in ensuing clashes, but disclosed that at least three border villages that hosted training camps for the fighters had been liberated. Villagers say there has been an unprecedented harsh crackdown by the military, which also used helicopters to fire on civilians. Kembong resident Victor Arenzip says his village and two others have been completely destroyed by the fighting and many people are dying.
They have bombed three villages, so everybody should be very careful with what is happening on the ground now. As I'm telling you, people are dying in their number in Manfi.
Manfi is a town in Manyu, an administrative area on Cameroon's border with Nigeria, where Cameroon says some of the fighters are trained. It has a vast expanse of forest, which the government says favors guerrilla warfare with hit-and-run tactics from armed separatists. The violence has pushed thousands of Cameroonians across the border to Nigeria since early October, when the separatists said they had declared their independence. Schools have been closed in most of the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions since November last year, when lawyers and teachers protested the overuse of French in the bilingual country. Violence erupted when separatists joined and called for complete independence. President Paul Biya has made it clear that he will not negotiate on separation, saying the country is indivisible. When the separatists started attacking military positions, he declared war on them, describing the separatists as terrorists. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Your vigilant music, don't abuse it.
That was a song by Winky D. That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kutsanai Mutetwa. Please join us again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for our special guest, the U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Ambassador Harry Thomas Jr., who will talk to us about what Washington hopes to see in the coming months in Zimbabwe, as well as what role younger Zimbabweans can take in shaping the future.
And remember, VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time. Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. I'm gonna go to the
tikadzirike pamabasa nezviito uopo vejera rangu takacherera nekuda kwechirango misodzi ndaherera kuti titsure vanhu hanzi tevanyepera haumbowana kana noda kukuterera ukada kudarisa ramangwana revechitiki vakukura varitora varikanda mupfungwa ukanzwa vachisimbisana vari pazvikona hanzi ikodzero yangu nyahamba vasungwa kusvikira